Welcome to the Scuffed Podcast. I'm Adam Bells in Minneapolis. With me is Greg Velasquez in Des Moines. We talk about U.S. men's soccer. Hey everyone, thanks for dialing us up. It's the most wonderful time of the year. The U-20s face Ukraine on Friday afternoon in their World Cup opener, and Greg Berhalter opens up his summer camp on Monday. There's going to be more soccer than any weekly podcast can take in, digest, and talk about over the next month or so, so we're going to have to pick our spots. But thankfully, Greg is back, for a little while at least, from paternity leave. How are you, man?
I'm doing good, Bells. I feel like the excitement of a new child is sort of only matched by the excitement of all of this U.S. soccer that's coming at us this month.
Yeah, I mean, they're kind of the same thing, right? How is that little boy? Is he sleeping through the night?
He's not sleeping through the night, but he sleeps enough. He actually sleeps enough during the day that I'm now able to sort of start carving out some of these blocks of time to discuss, to get my thoughts out in the open on all the U.S. soccer goings on. And there are so many goings on.
There have been a lot of goings on. One more question about Lil Man. Do you have him in goalkeeper gloves yet while he's taking his
nap?
No,
we don't. We don't, man. Goalkeeper gloves smell so bad anyway that I don't want to combine that with some of the other smells that come with having a new baby.
Yeah, wise. You're also headed to France for the Women's World Cup, I gather. Perfect way to celebrate the birth of a child, international travel.
Yes, so excited to have this child and celebrate it that we're almost immediately leaving him behind while we go take in. I don't want to jinx it, but while we go take in a quarterfinal in Paris. Ooh. That could potentially be the United States women versus host country, France.
Oh, man. Jealous. That's going to be sweet. Let's all hope for that. All right. Let's move into today's program. We're going to talk about the Gold Cup and, well, the Gold Cup roster, and then we're going to talk about the U-20 match on Friday. But first, just got to say thank you so much to everyone who's contributed to our Patreon or retweeted the ask we made for people to contribute to our Patreon. That we've had a great response, and that makes us feel good, and it makes our domestic partners less likely to murder us. So thank you very much, everyone.
Yes, thank you all.
And by the way, if you haven't contributed and you feel like you could or would like to, please do. So let's start with the Gold Cup roster, since that hit the wires sort of today. The Gold Cup for the U.S. begins versus Guyana on June 18 in St. Paul, the lovely city of St. Paul. That'll be the first competitive game for the U.S. men's national team since we lost to Trinidad in Cuba. Wild. Time flies. Or it doesn't. Not quite sure. Berhalter named a 40-man provisional roster, and that was released by CONCACAF on Monday. What happened after that, Greg? Can you sort of break it down? There's a lot of lists out there, a lot of names. What's happening?
So the 40-man list came out, and then just earlier today, that today being Wednesday, we got a bit of a Berhalter curveball in that he's announced a combined camp with some of the Gold Cup eligible players, and then some. I'm going to kind of call them like some random U20 U23 bodies yeah. for a 21-man camp in DC and this week.
Okay. So there's some overlap between the summer camp roster and the provisional roster.
Yeah, and the overlap is basically the Greg Berhalter newbies from Europe basically from Europe. So there's 11 names that overlap. None of the goalkeepers, but then you've got Tim Ream, Anthony Robinson, and is it Andrew Gutman? Don't
yes.
mock me.
Gutman. Andrew Gutman. Gutman, I don't know.
Okay, from the defensive side, as well as Marlon Fossey, Matt Miazga, Cameron Carter-Vickers, and Omar Gonzalez. So a lot of those guys, Omar and Ream and Miazga, I think are the only ones who've had a Berhalter camp so far. Is that right?
I think so. I don't think CCV's been involved.
So none of the MLS guys are included there from the defensive unit, and a lot of sort of first timers. From the midfield group, it's let me double check here. It's basically just Dwayne Holmes from sort of that central midfield listing.
Yeah, shout out to him and Emerson Heineman, who is, you know, hasn't played more than 15 competitive minutes in a year, it seems like, but he's on this list, but not on the provisional roster.
Right, he's one of the sort of U23 bodies. Him and Keaton Parks kind of stood out to me from the random U23s. And then going back to the Gold Cup overlap, it's Jonathan Amon, Joe Zhao, and Josh Sargent. So those three, I think, are the only three who haven't had a Berhalter camp under their belt. So my thought is that this is very much a camp to get as many of those guys up to speed about the system as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So that when the full camp convenes, you don't have to try to waste time reiterating stuff that most of those guys have already heard.
Right, and it seems smart. It seems smart, right? I mean, I'm glad Jonathan Amon and Josh Sargent are going to get a chance to get up to speed. Same with Dwayne Holmes. I guess I don't really care that much about Zhao, but maybe,
you know, I mean, with Berhalter, it's very much, I think he's very consistent about picking guys that fit his profile for each position, and maybe Zhao is just a perfect fit for him. Maybe he's not, I don't know, but that's at least the charitable read of it, is that Zhao might offer something that a more complete winger might be better. But maybe Zhao just hits this one thing that Berhalter needs to complement the pieces around him.
Yeah, I guess the thing, not to get too deep in the weeds right off the bat, but the thing that we need from our wingers in the Berhalter system that we haven't really been getting is 1v1 ability to just take the ball on the chalk and beat somebody, which I think Susaeta has made this point on Twitter, and I'm sure others have too, which creates space in the midfield for the dual eights to work. And if, you know, it's possible Zhao fits that profile where he can just, I know he's a quick and dynamic, at least that's his reputation. Maybe that's what he can do.
That was the word like 5 years ago when he was first getting his caps 4 years ago, before his career was derailed by injury. So I have not really seen any kind of Joe Zhao play since then. And truth be told, I didn't see a lot of Joe Zhao's minutes leading up to his U.S. caps.
Right.
But if that's what he offers, then who knows? That's sort of the beauty of this, is they're at least getting their shot. They're going to get in, they're going to get evaluated, and they're at least going to get measured. And that's what I'm most excited about. And yeah, I think you're right. I think this is a really good use of time by Greg Berhalter. Again, he remains consistently a coach who seems to have a really thorough, meticulous plan for getting the most out of the limited resources and time he has with the national team.
And this is the big one, man. I mean, this is really the biggest camp he's going to have, or the biggest collection of players, the most time he's going to have with those players between now and World Cup qualifying, really, right?
Right. With 2020 kind of being up in the air with our involvement in Copa America, I don't know if the 2021 Gold Cup will even exist. There's no Confederations Cup potentially to qualify for. So, yeah, this is it, man. This is everything after this will be like 4-day windows during the middle of seasons where players are going to be mostly trying to recover from their club games and then playing in an exhibition.
Okay, so we're not going to list all the names here. I figure if you listen to this podcast, you probably already know most of the names. You've probably already seen the list. We'll link to the releases in the show notes. If for anybody who's, you know, hasn't seen them, you can look them
up. You're talking about the 40-man full provisional roster.
Yeah, the 40-man and the summer camp list.
Sure,
the full list, because we just talked about the overlapping names.
Yeah, I'll say right now, I don't want to be like super pessimistic, but none of the U23 names are particularly exciting.
Yeah, I mean, when you think of people who are not particularly exciting, who are you thinking of? Let's just go ahead and put a fine point on it.
Well, it's harsh, but like, I'm not thrilled. I don't want to say I'm not thrilled. I don't expect much of Haji Wright from the senior national men's team.
Yeah. Josh Perez.
Luca De La Torre. Like, I think these are bodies that were available for, some of these guys are MLS guys, and I think they were available for a reason.
Yeah, and there's, you know, there's also the possibility for them to work their way into the U23 roster. They're going to have a camp, another camp, on, what is it, June 10 through 16. And that roster is, I think, yet to be named. So this is a tryout in a way for them to get into that, to get into that camp. Same with Keaton Parks, Eric Williamson. There's one name on here I do kind of like. I'm talking about this, the summer camp list, which is Kyle Duncan, the fullback for the Red Bulls. I've always liked that guy. I mean, I always liked the way he played. I don't know him personally, so I don't know if I like him, but I like the way he plays. We'll see. Let's not talk too much about that list.
Okay. Though. All right. So we're not going to list the full 40-man roster because that's too much. But let's go over some of the guys who are not on the list. Because I feel like if you get snubbed from a 40-man list, especially this list that included some real, what I would consider some real reaches, that could be real bad for your national team outlooks going forward.
Yeah, you're not in the picture, it appears, if you're over 25 and not on this provisional roster. I mean, maybe that's even too harsh. Who knows? So, you know, let's talk about the omission. So first of all, John Brooks and DeAndre Yedlin are both not going to be there. That's because they're injured. Brooks has been dealing with something for Wolfsburg over the last month or so, and good for him. Wolfsburg has qualified for Europa League, so that's big news. Yedlin had groin surgery and missed the last, I don't know, couple weeks of the season, and sounds like he's gonna miss most of the summer.
Yeah, Brooks, this doesn't really affect him that much. I feel like he's sort of a nailed on starter for this U.S. group. Yedlin, this could kind of like hurt him a little bit just because his role with the team is a bit unclear given the situation with Tyler Adams at right back.
Yeah.
So anyway, it might like be a bit of a setback for Yedlin, just sort of this missed opportunity.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. So who else is missing that you think is worth noting? I see you have them categorized here a little bit.
Yeah, I kind of do, and it's worth noting. I'm heartbroken over one name on this list, and that's Fabian Johnson, because I think Fabian Johnson could be starting for this team and make us a lot better at that hybrid left back center back role specifically.
Yeah.
And I wasn't terribly impressed with Tim Ream. I thought he had some real mistakes that sort of show what he's prone to do in games during our March friendlies. I think he'll be good enough for most of the Gold Cup. But I do think if we were just going to have a placeholder, an older placeholder for one tournament, I feel like Fabian Johnson would have been the guy. Maybe there's like a team culture issues or whatever. And we don't have to dwell on this because again, we're talking about 31-year-old left backs, but Fabian's the name that I actually did want to see that was omitted. And he's about the only one.
Yeah, I agree with you. I would rather see him there than Ream, and rather see him there than Daniel Lovitz or whoever else sort of ends up in that spot. They've all been pretty limited players. It could be that Anthony Robinson embraces Berhalter's vision for the position and, you know, locks it down. It doesn't seem like a great fit for him.
But no, that's why I kind of assume. I mean, I'm kind of in my head. I'm picturing Ream as our starter for this tournament at left back. But anyway, that's the Fabian omission, and that's the one that I really consider like a snub. All these other guys, I think it's just sort of like one more kind of nail in their coffin. Out of a group of defenders, that'd be guys like Jorge Villafania, Timmy Chandler. There was some groundswell, I feel like, for Ventura Alvarado, who I still haven't really seen much of, but Half Spaces, I think, did a good piece on him. And what he might be able to bring to specifically to Berhalter's setup. And then Eric Palmer Brown, he's like a younger omission, but the fact that he couldn't get in to a list of six center backs when Omar Gonzalez is on the list, I feel like that's not a great sign for Eric Palmer Brown.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess Eric Palmer Brown, he has time. I think he's only 21. He's got time to establish himself and do better. I've watched, I think, all the highlight videos that USMNT videos has made of EPB's performances this season. And I gotta say, he's been solid of late, but the best you can say for him at this time is that he's a professional center back. He's not putting on a show out there. He probably acknowledges that he needs to do better and take a step up if he wants to get in with the national team. Of the 5, I think he's the one who has a chance to break in, you know, in this cycle. And it just has to do with his club career.
Sure. No, that makes total sense. Like, I mean, it's not like you write off a 21-year-old center back.
Right.
Because he misses a camp. All right.
Midfielders. Moving into the
central midfielders, and I think this is the one where there are some real discouraging signs for some of these guys. I'm going to mention Alfredo Morales because, again, the internet seems to love Alfredo Morales and thinks he's sort of the big injustice of the U.S. call-ups, or a very specific set of internet fans. But Morales not make.
Morales Let's not call him the Morales suffragettes.
Morales not making the list probably means Morales doesn't have a future with this team. Then you get into some much younger guys who, you know, have been very much in the national team picture. Morales has never really been in the national team picture, right. But some of these guys really have been, and that's like Marky Delgado, Kellen Acosta, Russell Knaus. They've been like regular call ups for the last year and a half, and they didn't make the 40-man list. That has to be worrying for them. Mm.
They got to take a step forward. I don't know what Knaus can do. He may just be the wrong kind of player for the wrong kind of coach. You know. Yeah, I'm not too sad about it. Got to be honest.
No, I'm not either. Just again, just because of their history with the team, it seems notable that they couldn't crack a 40.
A page has been turned, and I should say I'm not sad about it, even though I'm, you know, arguably the most famous Marky Delgado fan in America.
Put it on your tombstone.
Outside of Herc Gomez, probably, because I think he likes him too. Anyway.
We have some attacking omissions that were kind of flavors of the month, maybe you'd call them. Julian Green, who had, again, been kind of involved for the past year with the national team in the Sarakin era. Available, not called. And then Roman Gall, Emmanuel Sabi, and like Lyndon Gooch, kind of those fringe attacking guys who generated some buzz over the past club season. None of them seem to be in the running right now, because there were some, I mean, when Joe Zhao's making the list, that means we're looking like they're turning stones over, but none of them are sort of given a shot.
Yeah. I think they're all still pretty young except for Green. Well, Green's what, 24 now?
He's 23, I think. Yeah. He seems so much older, partly because of his balding head.
Yes.
And partly because he was on the 2014 World Cup roster.
Right. Yeah. He's been around a while. You know, there's always light at the end of the tunnel, and Sabi had a pretty good close to the season with Hobro. I think he had a big goal and an assist and in a crucial game for them. But
Sabi is still Olympic eligible, right?
Yes. Gotta be.
Okay. None of the other guys, I don't think any of the other guys are, but I think Sabi still could be a Olympic roster guy.
Okay. So that's too bad for him that he got left off. I don't know. Maybe there was something else at work there. Let's move on to the forwards, the strikers.
All right. So on the forward list, I feel like there's a guy that people aren't talking about that much, and that's Bobby Wood. I don't know. I don't know if we just write him off because he can't cut it in the Bundesliga. But the man, like, that guy was our sort of A2 striker for the entire 2018 cycle. It seems bizarre.
A very successful cycle it was.
It wasn't, but in Bobby Wood's defense, some of the meager success we did have, he was very much a part of.
Yeah, that's true.
Anyway, it seems strange to just be like, Bobby Wood offers us nothing, when we're still calling in like a 27-year-old, 28-year-old Jazzy Zardes as one of our top three strikers.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess nobody's talking about him because there's nothing to talk about because he hasn't played for several months. And I don't know, he's making a lot of money over there in Germany, but his situation is complicated, right? Hamburg doesn't want to pay him what they're paying him, seeing as how they're going to be in the second tier again.
Right.
And they can't sell him to anybody.
Right. Relegated Hanover don't want him, and certainly don't want his wage bill. So it sounds like he is very much in this overpaid limbo where at least he's being overpaid.
Yeah, hard to feel too bad about that. He also has these nagging injuries, and maybe a little bit of a break will help him kind of get over the hump on those. Maybe not. Who are the other two? All right, well, who are the other two strikers?
In any event, I just want to say I consider Bobby Wood like a clearly superior option to Jazzy Zardes. So I am a little bit perplexed by his being left off. But I don't think he would necessarily start over a healthy Jozy Altidore and potentially not even play over a Josh Sargent.
Right. If Josh Sargent can get his sort of his act together under Berhalter.
Okay. The other two were sort of Andrei Novakovic, who I think is just on the everyone's sort of omissions list by inertia, because he was also one of those guys who's been involved in the Sarakin era, but potentially, and we've talked about this a lot, probably just never really rated as highly as even a Jazzy Zardes. So I'm not really too bothered by his being left off.
Again, he has a chance this year. He's reports are he's going to be back at Reading, so he's going to be a championship level striker. He has a chance to distinguish himself at that level. If he scores 10 goals in the championship next year, it'd be hard to imagine he doesn't get another look.
And I know we promised not to like lose ourselves in the weeds, but since that's what we do, can you tell me, Bells, because I've really only seen him play in those U.S. men's national team cameos and then his highlights. I haven't picked up any ESPN Plus games of his from the Eredivisie. What is he anything like Jazzy Zardes? Are they completely different players? Because people are kind of trying to say, well, if Zardes is on there, given his meager production this season, then Novakovic should be on there because he produces roughly the same number of goals per minute. Are they even close to the same kind of player though?
No, I guess they're not too different. It's just Novakovic is more of a he is what his size would indicate he is, right? He's very good at winning a long ball with his chest and knocking it down for somebody, holding the ball up. And then he does have an ability to create his own shot in the box. He can make a little move or drag the ball a little bit and then get just enough of a window to put a shot on frame. And yeah, that's how he scores his goals, it seems like to me. I don't see him as like a fearless, attack the ball in the air kind of striker. So in that sense, his size sort of belies who he is, but he's big enough to hold off a big center back and bring the ball down and find somebody's feet. I don't know. I think I watched two of his games this year, and I liked what I saw on a pretty bad team, right? I mean, he was on a near bottom table team most of the season.
Okay. I mean, I was honestly asking because I was curious. I feel like there might be other people who would like to sort of figure out what distinguishes those two guys from the who are maybe occupying bottom rungs on the forward depth chart.
I mean, there's no clear reason he's better, that Zardes is better than Novakovic in a vacuum. But, there's all this sort of human stuff at play. Berhalter knows Zardes. Zardes is, I guess he's seen as a great locker room presence. Berhalter trusts Zardes. Here we are, It's enough. It's enough of a question the competition Novakovic has been up against that he doesn't quite make the cut. But I think if I'm going to be a lot more mad if he puts up 10 goals in the championship next season and plays well and starts a lot and still doesn't get a look from Berhalter, then maybe we'll, fire up the outrage machine.
Okay. All right. Andrew Wooten, same question. Go.
I don't know. I've never seen him play. I'm sorry.
That's my thing. I've never seen him play.
17 goals in 2 Bundesliga. I mean, that's nothing to sneeze at. He is 29. I can only pay attention to too much. I haven't been paying attention to Wooten.
Yeah. And the 29 thing is where you do start sneezing a little bit and say that, at some point, why? Is it worth it? Is it worth, expending energy to evaluate the guy when you have a Zardes that you know and trust and he sets at least some kind of a baseline? And, again, I don't even think it's terribly optimistic to say Zardes is just holding a place, and I think Berhalter probably thinks the same thing for the next year at the most.
All right, so those are the omissions. Really, the only omission I'm mourning deeply is John Anthony Brooks, because we don't have another center back who can pass the way he can, and he certainly would be there if he were healthy. The rest is all debatable.
Yeah, Brooks is the guy who actually hurts the way we could play. Continue to throw Fabian in that mix too. I think we could play different soccer, and I think it would benefit our our core group to have Fabian in over a Tim Ream.
I agree with that. That's a good point.
But also against like group stage Gold Cup teams, it shouldn't actually matter that much, to be honest.
Well, hopefully it doesn't.
Oh, man.
Oh, brother. So I don't really want to choose a 23-man roster. Kind of want to leave that to Greg with two G's at the end. But you should give your 23-man roster, the roster that you would like to see when this is all pared down and announced in early June ahead of our friendly with Venezuela, I think.
Okay, I'm going to give it to you. You cut in with objections or questions. But this isn't just like the roster I want to see. I'm kind of expecting this roster because I do arrogantly think that me and Greg with two G's think similarly. All right.
Okay.
So my goalkeeper trio is going to be Stefan, obviously, and then Sean Johnson, and then Brad Guzan. I think Horvath gets left off, much to the chagrin of people who think Horvath is a better goalkeeper. I don't think Horvath is good enough with his feet, and I think Brad Guzan will be looked at as a good number three because it takes a different mindset to be a good third goalkeeper. You're basically a training body, and you have to sort of be okay with that.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. I mean, I know there is going to be plenty of Horvath chagrin if he's left off, and I'm not sure he's going to be left off, but he's so bad with his feet in that friendly in March that it's hard to imagine him working in this system. Defenders.
Yeah, so defenders. I think this is going to be kind of a little bit of an odd one, but I think there's only going to be one left back on the roster. I think Tim Ream will play it. What I think will happen is that, and this is sort of my wild speculation, Nick Lima has been playing left back for his club. Am I correct?
Yes. Yeah.
I think Nick Lima is going to pull double duty as our right back backup and our left back backup.
That makes sense.
Nick Lima also on the roster, because I think Berhalter is going to have to fudge a little bit in certain areas. So Nick Lima is going to be on the roster, but Tyler Adams will be our starting right back. He was listed as a defender in the roster announcement, so I think Berhalter has every intention of sticking with the Tyler Adams at right back experiment. Mm-hmm. Center backs, I'm picking Miazga and Long as our top two, and then I'm picking Walker Zimmerman, and I'm going to go out on a limb a little bit and say Miles Robinson. I'm actually kind of thinking it'll be CCV. I don't think Omar will make it.
Okay. Interesting.
That's where I'm like, please, I hope Omar doesn't make it.
Yeah. It would give everybody a lot less to complain about if he didn't make it. I like it so far.
All right. You still in? Mm-hmm. Bradley and Trapp are both going to be on here. There are no obvious backups for them other than Tyler Adams on the roster list. Did you kind of notice that? Every other player on the roster, like, goes really deep into some obscure areas, and then in that one holding mid spot, it's Bradley and Trapp, and that's it.
Yeah, well, I can't even think of who else in the pool would fit that role, like
Paxton Pomacall.
That's true. Yeah, Pomacall, Durkin, Edwin Cerrillo. You know, all three of them are with the U20s.
So those two guys, and that's it. They have no competition for their spots. They're in the roster. One of them will probably start. One of them is basically a lock to start.
Yeah.
Then we get into sort of those dual tens, dual eights, whatever you're going to call them. And since Pulisic was listed in this group, I think it's, again, safe to assume that he is at least starting out in this role. So I'm calling it Pulisic, McKennie, Legette. And this is where I go a little bit speculatively again. I'm saying Dwayne Holmes makes it, and I think Darlington Nagbe makes it. And I think Roldan and Georgie get left off.
Okay. I wouldn't be sad about that.
And this goes back to I think Berhalter needing to fudge a little bit with his depth chart because of the 23-man limit. And Dwayne Holmes in particular provides a nice backup for either of those two 10 spots.
Yep.
And he can also help back up the wingers, so you don't necessarily need to bring four wingers for those two winger spots. You can just bring three.
He can also play right back. And
yeah. Oh, there you go.
Actually, because he's also a midfielder, he seems like he'd be pretty decent in that inverted right back position. He's done it for Derby County a lot.
There you go.
Not a lot.
Just,
three times.
But I think. He's played it. He's played it. There you go. You've just bolstered my. So Lima almost becomes the left back, backup, just left back, and Holmes can double as the. There you go. So Dwayne Holmes solves a lot of problems, and it does matter to be able to solve those problems because
for sure
this isn't just a 2-game window where you can rotate five guys out and in. You've got 23 and that's it for a month.
Yeah,
6 games. Is that what we're looking at?
I think it's 6 games.
And the other piece becomes it gives you the flexibility to determine, all right, this Christian Pulisic as a 10 experiment is not going as well as I thought it would. And Berhalter doesn't seem like a super arrogant, egotistical guy. If Pulisic's not – if he's floundering in there and we're not getting anything from our best attacking player, Holmes could be another guy who gives you the flexibility to slide Pulisic back out wide. He can play in that central role.
You did mention McKennie as one of the dual 10s, right?
Yes, Pulisic and McKennie sort of the locked into, and then Legette, Holmes, and Nagby. And I think Nagby just makes it in because of the quality he has on offer. I think you can mold him into a couple of different spots. So I think Nagby makes it. I think Berhalter sees some value in Darlington Nagby.
You've always had a soft spot for Darlington.
I have. But anyway, that's five guys for four spots because of Holmes' sort of versatility.
I like it.
And I think people are kind of defaulting towards Berhalter taking his January and March call-ups, like that the roster will just kind of stay intact from those camps. And I don't think we have any reason to think that yet. It's still too early in Berhalter's era to think that he sort of has his guys and he's sticking with them. I mean, he's only had one 3-day camp with the full pool available, so we don't really know who his guys are yet. And really, I just think that Roldan, legit, like guys like Legette, Georgie, they haven't been so good in their performances that they've sort of ruled out the possibility of being dropped.
No, definitely not. All right, who you got on the wings? Who you got on the wings in that striker?
All right, Tyler Boyd, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tyler Boyd, because U.S. Social media made a big deal about a switch, and I feel like you don't do that unless you're planning on calling the guy up.
Right.
Paul Arriola, because I think he's been our most consistent performer in the Berhalter era so far, even though he hasn't necessarily been the starter every time. And then I'm going with Jonathan Amon because I believe Jonathan Amon will make the spot his. I think he'll add the danger that we need in that spot during the camps. It looks like he's getting the chance to show that he can do it between this preliminary camp, and then if he remains invited for the full Gold Cup pre-camp.
Right.
Then it's his chance to show he can do it.
Yeah. Well, we're breaking out the champagne if he makes the Gold Cup roster. That's all I gotta say. I mean he was so encouraging to us. I think we were not necessarily in the majority on that, but we thought his performance against Peru was so encouraging for a kid making his first national team appearance that I wanted to see more of it and as soon as possible, and we haven't gotten to. But
again, I'll keep saying it. He had 60 minutes in a like tactical like wasteland of a game, and he was incredibly dangerous on multiple occasions, more so than Corey Baird has been in the three starts that he's had in Berhalter's very defined system that's meant to maximize his abilities. So I feel like people are making not a big enough deal out of what he produced.
Right.
I think he'll show it, and I think Berhalter will see it. And I think he makes the roster.
All right. Boy, it would have been fun to be in the film room with Berhalter when he was making these decisions. You think he was like? You think he was rewinding and fast forwarding through that Peru game and saying like, "Oh, wait a second, look at this decision by Amon here."
There would have been a lot to fast forward and rewind. So I'm hopeful. Yeah.
Okay. So that leaves us just to recap. The wingers are Arriola, Amon. Who's the other one?
Boyd. Tyler Boyd. And that's it. I think Morris might be hurt now, but I think Lewis, and Baird are left off, and JoJo.
Yeah. Okay. So then you have room. Do you have room for three forwards?
three forwards, and you got to take three, not just because Berhalter loves Jozy Altidore, but because Jozy Altidore cannot get through an event uninjured. So you can't just go with two. And plus, for as much as I think Sargent is our guy, he didn't look fit for his for all of his Werder Bremen appearances.
No, he didn't. He looked like he got tired after 10 minutes. In sand. Yeah.
So, yeah, so Altidore, Sargent, and Zardes as the three attackers. I think Ramirez gets dropped. I don't think there's any way he could bring four strikers, though. So I feel like one of them has to go, and Ramirez seems the obvious choice. Unless Altidore is deemed not fit.
Yeah, but he was back on the field over the weekend, so presumably he'll be fit. I like the idea of only bringing three wingers, because then that, you know, increases the chances of Pulisic being moved out wide, you know, if things shake out a certain way. And like you said, Holmes can play on the wing too, so great. Boy, I'd love to see that lineup. I'm not as optimistic as you that's what Berhalter's going to do. I feel like Baird has a witch doctor's hold on Greg Berhalter.
That is, but that's everyone kind of thinks that, but I just, there's no, I don't think we have a reason yet to jump to that conclusion.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, I feel more excited about the Gold Cup than I did 15 minutes ago. That's for sure. go ahead.
Just, it's funny because, so if you switch Eamon and Baird, suddenly we're like, ah, this Gold Cup sucks.
I know. It's that simple. Just bring Eamon and, like, Bells is all in for the Gold Cup. So that does make me more excited, but I'll still go with my prepared remarks here to segue to our second segment, which is, I really do think that after the first 10 or so names in the pool, it's hard to feel too strongly about anyone. Obviously, Adams, Pulisic, and McKennie are, you know, we love those guys. Brooks is a beloved center back, clearly a class above the competition. Steffen seems like the clear number one at goalkeeper. Miazga, Long, Altidore, Sargent are all roster locks for me. But, you know, after that, it gets, you know, there's more. But after that, it starts to get pretty muddy. And that's because I just don't think the player pool is that great. Don't want to sound like a broken record, but while I'm excited to see Holmes with the men's national team, I'm not 100% convinced he's a huge step up from Legette. Are you?
I'm not convinced at all. Like, I don't think there's any way to, and even with Eamon, I'm not convinced that'll be the case. But I'm the opposite of you on this pessimism meter for once. I think it's really exciting to see, like, even with Legette, like, to see what these guys do with an actual tactician at the helm. Mm-hmm. So I actually am pretty jazzed about it, Bells, if I can just tell you that.
Well, you've taken a long break, so maybe that's why.
but I get what you're saying. Like, no matter how jazzed I am about it, and I'm just going to keep saying that I'm jazzed, we're still talking about like a guy in Sebastian Legette who's kind of not actually blowing it up with the Los Angeles Galaxy. We're talking about Jonathan Eamon, who hasn't even lit the Danish league afire. So there is this, again, there's this built in, like, you have to have some humility about our player pool. We definitely are not chock full of Champions League players.
Yeah. To say the least.
Yet.
And
yet
exactly. Yet is a key word. Trapp and Bradley, you know, they're, like you said, they're almost certainly both going to be on the final 23 man roster. I feel like we still don't know if at this stage they're international caliber midfielders. I mean, obviously Bradley was at one point in his career. Is he now? It's a question we still don't have an answer to, and I'm not taking that as a good sign.
I'll take either of them in a game that we know we're going to be on top.
Okay.
I think they'll be just fine in those games. And I don't mean just fine in like the Tim Ream just fine sense. Like, I think they actually add a lot of value in those games because of what they're good at. And that sort of being a good backstop for balls that weak teams try to clear out when they're under a ton of pressure, and actually kind of finding the right pass to put it back into the mix.
Okay.
Okay. But yes.
Well, regardless of that. Yeah. I think we agree we need more talent to come up through the ranks, which brings us to our next subject, the U20 World Cup. And we'll get into Friday's matchup with Ukraine right after the break. Coverage starts Friday at 1:30 p.m. Central Time on FS1, the US U-20s versus Ukraine at City Stadium in Bielsko, Biala, Poland. That's in the southwest corner of the country. A pleasant-looking 15,000-seat venue that should be full of Ukrainians. It's 4 hours from the border. Poland has a huge expatriate Ukrainian population. It should be a tough game.
How much U.S. support is traveling to this, Bels? I'm a little bit shocked that you didn't find room in the scuffed budget to travel.
Yeah, it's it was close, but we couldn't quite fit it in the budget. I would guess there'd probably be a couple hundred American fans there. I mean, is it possible that more people would make this trip? What percentage of the American population even knows this tournament is happening?
I don't know, but whatever it is, a large fraction of that population is largely because of the work that you do on Twitter.
Okay. Well, so big picture, I should just get this out of the way. We want to win the group.
Of course, but why do we want to win the group so bad?
Yeah, of course we want to win it. But the problem is if we get second in our group, then we face almost certainly France in the round of 16. France is the odds maker's choice to win the tournament. They have, I think as Matt Hartman, our friend and colleague, pointed out, they have on their roster 300 first team caps in the big five leagues in Europe.
Give us some context. What's the U.S. first team cap
it's
number?
It's like 10, and I think somewhere around 10, and mostly that's because of Tim Weah and Tim Weah.
Okay, those are Euro Big Five league caps. We're not. I mean, I feel like they don't appreciate what an MLS cap is worth.
Yeah, I mean, we got plenty of MLS caps, so that's that's a consolation prize here, but it's. Anyway, France is really good. Everybody knows that. They just won the World Cup. Their U-20s are good, too. Their U-21s are good. Their U-19s are good. They're the favorite in almost every youth tournament they play in now. They have roster upon roster upon roster of potentially world-class players coming up through the ranks.
France have quite literally cracked the game of soccer.
I mean,
their women are the second favorites to win the Women's World Cup.
It's funny because they haven't, they haven't really cracked anything else over the last 100 years.
Damn, Bell.
Well, I mean, Napoleon was quite successful. That was a while ago.
That was 200 years. All right, so we want to dodge France in a way, but in another way, it's like whatever. Bring on France. Why are we in this tournament if we don't want to see how our boys stack up against? The best U-20 team in the world.
Yeah, well, that's true. If we end up playing them in the round of 16, fine. Let's do it. Let's see what happens. But from a pragmatic point of view, if we want to make it to the semifinals, which I think is kind of like that would be something that I could really celebrate. It's very realistic if we win the group. It's too complicated to lay out in detail, but if we win our group, we would then face a third place team from one of two other groups, and that game is winnable. And then likely either Uruguay, Colombia, or Senegal in the quarterfinals. Those are going to be if we face any of them, that's going to be a tough game, no doubt. But it's not like facing France or Portugal or Argentina, who has sort of reloaded since a rough qualifying tournament. So. That's why we want to win the group. And
okay, so a lot riding on every single available point in the group stage.
Yeah, and beating Ukraine on Friday, obviously a good way to go about winning the group. So what are we likely to face from Ukraine?
Are you calling Ukraine the sort of odds makers favorites to win our group?
No,
is that the case?
We are the odds makers. Favorite to win our group. Well, no, that's not true. I think it's like really close between us and Nigeria.
Okay, so Ukraine third.
But some of the bookies have Mexico more likely to win the overall tournament than us. So, I should put in that grain of salt. I don't know how much these bookies are paying attention to U-20 World Cup qualifying. In any case.
Bells, that's a math glitch because the bookies pay so much attention that they know that we might have to play France in the round of 16.
Maybe so. Maybe so.
They're actually paying that close attention. Okay. Continue about Ukraine. Give me the scoop on Ukraine for Friday's game.
Yeah, I feel like this game is going to really set the tone. Ukraine is going to sit and counter. That's my understanding. We had a long podcast where we talked to three people, one of them being Vadim Fermanov, who writes about Ukrainian football for Football Grad, a website. He said that's what they're likely to do. They have a great goalkeeper, a Real Madrid player on loan at Leganés. He's going to be between the pipes, and then they have a left back with the senior national team named Vitaly Mykolenko, who plays center back in a three-man back line. It's like a 3-5-2/5-4-1 kind of deal, you know, sort of depending on game state. And that Mykolenko kid is really good, tough competitor, great athlete. So they're going to sit back and let us come at them, and then they're going to try to attack through Vladislav Supriaha, who was a star at the European qualifying tournament last summer. That would have been U19s, but they're, you know, everybody's a year older now, so they're U20s. And that's going to be dangerous. We got to be able to handle that. And, you know, frankly, throughout the tournament, that's going to be the issue for the U.S. Tab has said, we want to go out there and we want to take it to people. So we're going to have to learn how to handle the counter. I don't know. Do you have any principles to relay on that front?
Well, I was kind of just going to ask you, as good as Ukraine probably are at this if you have a superstar U20 player, doesn't it kind of seem like that style plays into our strengths a little bit? Like, if you're going to invite the U.S. onto you in this cycle, that's about as much as we can ask for with, you know, you're basically giving the keys of the game to a Mendez and a Pomacall and whoever it is, Ledesma. Doesn't that seem like that's what we want?
Yeah, I guess. I just don't know, you know, are we going to be able to break people down when there's not a lot of space back there? I don't know. I mean, that'll be the challenge, right?
That's always a challenge. But I got to say, like, I'm really excited to see our group of attackers go against a team that wants to try to sit in and think that they can absorb the pressure. I feel like everyone we have is well suited to that kind of a game.
I hear you.
Richards,
I think
Richards and McKenzie are both very good at sort of snuffing out those counter situations and dealing with them. So yeah. I'm pretty excited for Friday.
Yeah. Oh, you're telling me. We could come out and win 5-0. You know, we could do that. I think this team has that level of talent and, you know, has the pieces, but we could also be made to pay on the counter. And defending in transition, which from what we hear from Tab, is a really important thing for this team. They're going to have to learn to be locked in and act quickly in those moments of transition, get behind the ball. That's going to be crucial, I think. I mean, Tab said so himself. And then I guess part of that is getting buy-in from everybody in the front line, that the pressing needs to be immediate when we turn the ball over, so that we don't allow, you know, clean passes for 40 yards into space. If we can do that, I think we'll, you know, we should win this game, and we'll have a, you know, really happy weekend.
I'm half banking on it. So who's going to be in charge of dealing with those transition moments for you, Bells? I mean, obviously you're saying we need the front line to be pressing away to try to limit the quality of those chances Ukraine have going back the other way. But how do you think we're going to set up to sort of snuff that out once they start trying to find that space in transition?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see who Tab plays in the midfield. I mean, it's obvious. I'll just give my lineup as we go here. I'd like to see David Ochoa at goalkeeper, but I'm not wedded to that. I think Brady Scott could easily be the guy in that spot. And then I don't think anybody doubts that Sergino Dest and Chris Gloucester are going to be the fullbacks. Dest on the right, Gloucester on the left. And then McKenzie is a captain of the team. That was announced yesterday. So he seems like he must be healthy. He and Richards will be the starting center backs. The question is who's going to be in the midfield. And I think most people think it's going to be Durkin, Mendez, and Pomacall. I mean, that's what I would have said a month ago or so. And it's what, you know, what a lot of the projections are. The questions are, is Pomacall fully healthy? He's, you know, we have video of him training in Poland with the side, but we don't know if he's fully fit. If he's not, I think Ledesma would be Richie Ledesma, favorite of this podcast, will be fine in that spot, just fine. And then the limb I'm going to go out on in the midfield is, and I saw Travis Clark put this on Twitter today too, I think there's a good chance Tab goes with Edwin Cerillo over Durkin as the holding midfielder, just because Cerillo is more mobile, he's a little bit tougher in the tackle, and you know he I feel like I would feel more comfortable with him manning that spot and tracking down runners and breaking things up on the counter than I would with Durkin. Although I think Durkin could probably handle the job too.
I like it, Bells. I feel like you've got our winning lineup set up there. Did you tell us who your wingers and your striker are going to be?
Yeah, way on the left, Conrad De La Fuente on the right, and Sebastian Soto at striker. I know some people want to put Weah at striker and then have Yanez on the left. I think either way would probably be fine with me, but Soto is built for that sort of come back to the ball, link up play, find somebody's feet, and then his movement off the ball is really good. So is Weah, no doubt about it. I would like to see Yanez come in off the bench late as a spark plug, and that's what I got. But there's a lot of, honestly, there's a lot of permutations here that would make me and a lot of people happy because the roster is so deep. And we should mention that Julian Araujo just flew to Poland last night because Ayo Akinola got an ankle injury. So I was really sad that Araujo wasn't on the roster. Now he is, and I think that's a bummer for Akinola, but it's good for the roster because now we have a backup for Dest if Dest gets in yellow card trouble or gets hurt, and we have more cover at center back, which is after McKenzie and Richards where it gets a little dicey, I think, with Abubakar Keita and Matt Real.
It almost gives us a little bit of cover for Gloucester too, right? Because if Gloucester goes down, potentially Dest could slide over to the left and Araujo could play on the right.
Exactly, yeah. Dest is super comfortable at left back. So I think it's a win-win, even though it's really sad for Ayo. And Ayo, you know, Ayo acquitted himself well in CONCACAF qualifying. Hate to see that happen to a kid, but I think it makes the roster more complete and more flexible.
Right. We lose an attacker where we're stacked, and we add a little bit of depth where we were. And I don't know if Araujo was if Araujo wasn't on the roster to begin with because he had been dealing with a little injury and there was some uncertainty around him, and maybe the extra week and a half is what was needed to determine he was fully fit. Who knows?
It could be. Yeah, Tab hinted at that. I mean, surely Tab was in contact with the Galaxy and with the player to find out how healthy he was. And my understanding is he was plenty healthy. I mean, Araujo started a game 2 days after the roster came out, 1 day after the roster came out, so for the Galaxy. So that's, I mean, to a certain extent, it's kind of like we've talked so much about this team and about this tournament. Time to stop talking and watch the game. You know what I mean? You got any other thoughts or questions about it?
No, I'm excited because you guys, I hear you all talking about it so much that I feel now I feel like super connected to all of these players, and I'm super excited to see them against what I'm going to call like real competition, because the only time I've seen them is in the CONCACAF Championship, and that was a bit of a laugher.
Yeah, that's true. These are going to be the toughest, most intense games that most of them have ever played. Although those Bundesliga U19 games are pretty. They get pretty intense. So, yeah, I should agree with you very much that if any center backs that we have are equipped to deal with a counterattack, it's Richards and McKenzie, man. Those guys eat up ground. Richards in particular sees danger a mile away and comes flying to snuff it out. So I can't wait. I can't wait for kickoff. 1:30 Friday afternoon. Take the day off.
I will be. I will be sitting with a small child on my lap shouting at a television.
All right. Anything else we should talk about?
United States women play Mexico on Sunday. Yes. Watch that too. Because we're getting some cool head scratching at times experimentations going into the I think this is their last tune-up before France. So check that out. It's worth watching.
Last tune-up before the group stage starts. Who's their first group stage opponent?
They play Thailand, and that should be where they start to rack up some goal difference ahead of their final group stage, all-important game against Sweden. Because, again, they got to win this group to get into the Paris quarterfinal that I'll be attending.
Okay. All right. Well, for your sake, I hope they do. I mean, they're the odds. They're the odds-on favorite to win the tournament again, right?
Yes. Yes, they okay. are. Deservedly so.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Greg. Good to have you back. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll see ya.